Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can join us in the chat room there if you wish. Today, a very special guest, as usual, from EndTheLie.com, Madison Rupert. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Vinnie. It's a pleasure.
You've got an enormous reputation, and I've not actually looked at the website too much, yet I have heard of it many, many, many times. So you must be doing a lot of very important things, Madison.
Really? Well, I hope it's not all bad, as reputations tend to be. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think it'll be the 2-year anniversary this March, I believe. So it's a relatively new website, but I started it up and people seemed to like what I was covering. So it kind of snowballed pretty quickly. And now we have a large Facebook presence as well. And really, it's just been a lot of fun despite covering pretty horrific stuff as per usual.
Well, you know, if you're going to cover the news or anything of importance, mostly it's horrific. Have you noticed how we tend to focus on bad news?
Yes, and I'm quite guilty of that myself, but it seems that the bad news just jumps to my attention much more quickly than the good news. I have been able to write about some good news, thankfully, occasionally, but, you know, unfortunately, the good news turns into bad news relatively quickly. Something that jumps to mind would be Judge Catherine Forrest ruling that the indefinite detention provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2012 were indeed unconstitutional, and Americans couldn't be indefinitely detained without charge or trial. But then, of course, within 24 hours, an appeals court above her came around and overturned that decision. And, of course, that judge was appointed by Obama. But that's just coincidence, of course, right?
Yeah. You're either a conspiracy theorist who believes that powerful people use their power, or you're a coincidence theorist who thinks everything happens by pure coincidence. There's no such thing as a backroom deal. There's no such thing as dishonesty. There's no such thing as scumbaggery.
Yeah, of course, and there's no such thing as the definition of conspiracy, which of course is quite common. Two or more people getting together to engage in criminal activity is surprisingly common, but of course, whenever you talk about it, it instantly becomes theory, even if it's painfully obvious. But, you know, unfortunately, the news is more often than not negative, it seems, at least these days, especially when it comes to court decisions here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. I have this great fear that one day the concept of truth, facts, and evidence will simply go by the wayside in favor of what does everybody think or everybody believe? It's like, oh my God, we're almost already there.
Exactly. I think it's a scary idea, but it's surprisingly common, this whole idea of no absolute truth. There is no real truth. What's true for me might be true for you, but not necessarily. And a closely coupled idea of consensus truth, which is if enough people believe it, then it is true. And unfortunately, that's becoming increasingly common. And it's pretty disturbing, especially because the large number of people are completely unaware of what's going on and have no interest in truth, of course. But, you know, thankfully there are people like you who are out there trying to at least wake those people up, shake them from their slumber, as it were, in a way that's not completely depressing because, unfortunately, this kind of information is quite troubling when you get into it, really.
Well, a correction there. I'm not actually trying to wake anybody up. I don't believe you can. I think people wake themselves up. Like, nobody forced me to sit down and watch 160 documentaries inside of 3 months. Nobody forced me to do anything. I woke myself up. And I think that's the same with everybody else. You know, it takes a lot of information that you have to go of your own volition to go and wake yourself up. And it's other people who simply, you know, they'll be the rock in the pool from the ripples stretch outwards and start to affect everything in a very minute way. And my goal is not to wake people up at all. It's actually to keep those who have already woken up sane. Because it's no good waking up to the New World Order and then having it depress you and make you go crazy.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately it seems easier and easier when you just look at the everything that is going on, especially here in the United States. Although, as you said, when you were on my show, it's really no different over there in New Zealand. I mean, you guys are the testing bed, I think you called it, or the testing ground for these types of New World Order, if you will, plots and schemes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, I think I've been wondering recently just how much you need to know kind of thing before you make a decision, before you get off your ass, before you do something, you know? There's somebody coming at me. How close does he have to get to you before you either start running away or start thinking about getting in defense mode? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people have to get cut by the guy coming at you with a big knife until they'll believe that the guy's actually a threat to them, at least these days. You know, we've been so conditioned, it seems, at least here in the United States, that, you know, people will put up with almost anything. I mean, you know, here in the U.S., just 6 days ago or so, a federal judge ruled that the Obama administration can claim it is legal to kill Americans while never having to explain why it's legal to kill Americans. This judge actually called it an Alice in Wonderland in nature ruling. I mean, this is in her actual ruling. She called it Alice in Wonderland in nature, or she said the Alice in Wonderland nature of this ruling is not lost on me. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. You want to laugh, but I mean, this is insane. They're literally claiming the authority to kill Americans legally while never having to explain why it's legal. And this kind of stuff, unfortunately, is going on all around the world. It just, since it's not on our front doorstep here in the United States, I think a lot of people are able to push this whole issue. In this case, it was surrounding drones, push this whole issue out of their consciousness and, you know, think, oh, well, it's going on in Pakistan and Yemen and everywhere else, but not here. So who cares, really? But, you know, we're talking about Americans here. In this case, it was an American who had his American citizenship. He was an alleged terrorist, emphasis on alleged, no trial or anything. And of course, his 16-year-old son from Colorado. But, you know, if that, this kind of stuff doesn't force people to examine what is going on in the world with a critical eye, I mean, I really don't know what will at this point.
I remember I was talking to my sister over the holidays, and she tells me that she obeys every single law and will never break them because she doesn't want to be hassled. And I was the minutia of her understanding of what law actually is was kind of baffled me. And I was just thinking to myself, all right, well, I'm sure if you lived in South Africa, you would have abided by the law and let all the blacks be suppressed. I'm sure if you were living in Nazi Germany, you would have helped to suppress the Jews and everything because it was the law. She wouldn't have been like Martin Luther King, on the other hand, saying when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty.
Yes, and I actually had Brandon Turbeville, writer for Activist Post, on my show recently, and he was talking about that fact precisely, that, you know, people say law-abiding citizen so often when talking about a wide variety of subjects, but at some point in time, there has to be people who no longer abide by the law. You know, if free speech becomes a crime, will you continue to take pride in being a so-called law-abiding citizen? But unfortunately, here in the U.S., you don't even need to break any laws to be indefinitely detained. So, you know, being following all the laws just to never worry about being hassled won't protect you at all here in the United States, unfortunately. I don't know where your sister lives, but if she lived here in the U.S., that would be a very misguided view, unfortunately.
Well, I'd believe that misguided view is held by probably the majority of people all over this world. And that's why whenever gun bans happen throughout history, the law-abiding citizens hand in their guns and wind up getting subsequently enslaved or exterminated.
Yes, exactly. And unfortunately, that's an issue that's facing us here in the United States now, is that, you know, in the wake of these shootings, which seem to be so well timed every time they do occur, and they are quite tragic, although some people questioned if they were real events. You know, I'm not quite sure. I think there's a lot of speculation going on, but regardless, what we can see is that politicians use these kinds of incidents to leverage their positions into the public eye, and in some cases force them upon people. And here in the United States, if Senator Feinstein, who unfortunately is my so-called representative, of course she doesn't represent any of my interests whatsoever, she's trying to pass a bill which would actually open the door for confiscation here in the United States. So, you know, unfortunately, that is a very real possibility here in the U.S., as it already has occurred in so many other Western countries. And the exchange between Alex Jones and Piers Morgan was especially hilarious, when Piers Morgan continued to try and bandy about these statistics from the U.K., showing their loss of gun rights to be this wonderful thing that stopped crime and all this stuff. But of course, he was only citing gun-related crime, while other crime is on the rise. And while I think that the interview could have gone better in a lot of ways, it was especially hilarious when Alex Jones asked him why he wasn't still in the UK and why he wasn't facing the hacking charges and why he was fired and all these things. And Piers Morgan just kind of had this blank look on his face. I thought that was pretty hilarious, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard about this this interview this morning. I was on with Len Horowitz and Sherry Kane, and they said that it appeared to be crazy and like a an interview that would help to demonize the entirety of the Patriot movements basically worldwide.
Well, it's very true, unfortunately, and while I think Alex Jones did throw out some good information, he did it in a way that most people would not be able to hear. I honestly think that most people who are unfamiliar with this type of material would view the presentation of Alex Jones as little more than a crazy person with a sandwich board saying the end is near, screaming in their face and, you know, screaming bloody murder right in their face. That is really how it came off, almost lunatic fringe-esque. I mean, at some points, you know, Alex Jones was screaming about boxing Piers Morgan in a red, white, and blue outfit and all this stuff. I mean, at some points, it literally made no sense whatsoever.
What color? Well, hold on. What colors are the Union Jack again?
Yeah, exactly. Right, which is hilarious. He didn't say he was like the red, white, and blue, and you can wear that, you know, Union Jack thing or whatever. But of course, they'd be matching. Yes, exactly. They'd be matching, but apparently that was lost on Alex Jones. But it honestly seemed to be a setup, honestly. I mean, it was painful to watch for the most part, where Alex Jones was just screaming over Piers Morgan, and then Piers Morgan brought up 9/11 out of nowhere. And yeah, like I said, there was a lot of things that could have been handled in a much better way to present, you know, the information.
I reckon they should have had John Lott on, the author of More Guns, Less Crime. I have never in my life seen somebody talk with such statistical authority and factual sequential evidence as John Lott. If you see his presentations, the debate over guns is over because you now have facts and evidence instead of opinion.
Yes, and it is a simple fact that statistically more guns equal less crime. But, you know, when we're talking about someone like Piers Morgan and CNN, which I believe he's on CNN, they would never have someone like that on. I mean, the last thing they want is someone who can sit there and calmly refute every single one of Piers Morgan's so-called arguments, most of which are fallacious or factually incorrect or misleading. You know, he would, for instance, say, how many gun-related crimes were there in the UK or in Britain? And it is an extremely low number, but of course you can counter that with saying, well, gun-related crime is actually a very small proportion, especially there, of violent crime.
Hold on, we're coming to break, Madison. We'll be right back. Madison Rupert, endthelie.com.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly leak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly
friendly
control. These hangman rogues.
Welcome back, everybody.
Deadly gangsters, the judges and the police, trick.
Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is Madison Rupert from endthelie.com. Madison, I was wondering, how old are you, man?
I am just 23 now. 23 as of December the 8th.
5 years me junior. And you're already really kicking ass. Like, you have a look at endthelie.com on Alexa, and you're right up there with some of the major players in the truth movement. How long have you been doing this?
Well, like I said, I believe I would need to double check, but I believe it'll be the 2-year anniversary coming up in just a few months in March or so, I believe. But, you know, basically I started the site on a whim after seeing a clip by Hillary Clinton speaking before some Senate or congressional committee, in which she basically said that the alternative media is winning. And I saw that is the impetus I needed to actually get out and do something, because I'd been reading and researching and like you said, sitting down and watching documentaries for hours on end and stuff like that. But, you know, I thought, well, you know, I can write remotely well, and you know, I think I can put my thoughts on paper in a or on screen, as it were, but in a logical, consistent manner. So I started doing it, and I got a positive response. So that gave me even more inspiration, and it's kind of spiraled on from there. Unfortunately, you know, I am a full-time student on top of doing this, so there's not nearly as much time as I'd like. You know, I'd love if I could sit down and devote 10 hours straight every single day to just writing and writing and writing, but you know, unfortunately, you know, I can barely cover the server bills at this point. So, but maybe in the future that'll be a realistic possibility if all goes well.
Can people donate to your site?
Yes, they can. And, you know, I appreciate it. I've gotten some random donations before. Actually, when I first started, some guy in Sweden just sent me like $50 or something like that. And back, you know, that was huge to me. But yeah, on every inner page, there's a little floaty bar that's got, links to click on Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And then if you look there at the bottom, there's a little ugly PayPal donate button, and you can click that and donate through there.
See, me personally, I'd survive almost exclusively on donors and subscriptions. And the new business model, I think, in terms of media, is in fact listener and consumer supported, not sponsor supported.
Yeah, I think that is by far the best route to go. I'm trying to figure out some kind of model where I can do that, where I can actually offer something to people for, you know, a monthly subscription, or, you know, some kind of bonus with their donation or something. I'm trying to figure out something, because, you know, a long, long time ago, I was banned from Google Ads, and that basically is the only way you can make a significant amount of money running a website these days. They pretty much have the market cornered several times over. And of course, it doesn't help that I have a page outlining the CIA, NSA connections with Google, and, you know, several dozen articles critical of Google, and an article, you know, going through how to block their tracking and all that kind of stuff. That's not very good for their business model. So I can understand why they would want to ban me completely and bar me from ever opening an account in the future. But, you know, right now the only thing I have are these in-text ad things and these things that like pop up on the side, and it's really quite annoying to me that I need to do that, especially because I would literally make more money standing on the street panhandling. I guarantee you that here in Southern California, you can make a lot of money panhandling if you're clever about your signage. And you know, right now there's an ad on the article about the federal judge ruling that the Obama administration can kill you without explaining why. There's an ad for a transvaginal mesh lawsuit. So this is the kind of stuff I'm forced to advertise, unfortunately, and you have no control over it. So you know, it's probably humorous to some people, although some people are probably very, very confused.
I don't know what transvaginal mesh is, but I want some.
Yes, and you know, you probably want to get one and then sue someone for it or something. Yeah, I didn't know what it was either, and I looked it up, and apparently there are some problems involved. So if you have transvaginal mesh and you need to file a lawsuit, no, I'm kidding.
It's a mesh down there.
Yeah, and they also cover pelvic organ prolapse and other wonderful things, apparently.
Pelvic organ prolapse, is that what they play in the churches these days?
Yes. It sounds more to
Catholic
me like
Catholic ones, at least.
Yeah, it sounds to me like a metal band name right there. Pelvic organ prolapse.
Mm. Or maybe a new agey acid jazz band that you would see in some dark, smoky underground club.
Yes, but then they would have to throw experiment or project on the end of it, and then it would be perfect.
Mm, mm. Like Depeche Mode.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm very thankful for you being out there and actually making people laugh while we think about this kind of information, because it can be quite difficult unless you're laughing at the absurdity of it all, which I honestly end up doing quite often, you know. I mean, this whole big deal, here's an example of something that made me laugh recently. This whole huge deal about the fiscal cliff and cutting all these social services and all this, we have no money, the world's going to end. Well, just today I wrote about the government spending, you know, an estimate would be $400 to $500 million on more drones. We now have 37 Global Hawk drones. These drones, you know, that fly for 30 hours at a time. You know, this is the stuff we need. You know, these are the things that they're really debating. How many drones can we get next year? You know, that's what they really care about. It's not any kind of important spending, in my opinion. But, of course, we have no money to spend anyways, but we just keep printing it. It's a wonderful system.
Yeah, I've always wondered about U.S. monetary policy, and it's like, how could they ever have a financial crisis if all they do is just make up more money whenever they have a crisis?
Yeah, exactly. It's a complete joke at this point. I mean, that really is the system, except they don't even need to print money anymore. They literally just add it on a spreadsheet document, essentially. I mean, they don't even need to turn on the printing presses. I mean, it's a wonderful image, Bernanke going, oh, turn on the presses. But that's not necessary when the Federal Reserve is loaning to our government at interest. You know, it's just like, okay, we created this money, now you can spend it and then pay it back to us at interest.
You literally have to imagine it exists.
Yes, precisely. I mean, the whole idea of the modern banking system is really, really mind-blowing when it comes down to it. I mean, if you get a mortgage on your house, you are loaning getting a loan on money that never existed. I mean, you are paying interest on imaginary money, and then they take that imaginary money and then create more imaginary money thanks to fractional reserve banking, and then from that they can create more imaginary money and more imaginary money. It goes on ad infinitum.
I believe that's called a Pierce mortgage.
Yuck. You really do need a band behind you, I'm telling you.
I always thought about some kind of very, I don't know, like some sort of a mariachi, you know, with a big Spanish hat or something like that. Every time I tell a lame joke, it'd be quite regular, you know, just a big strum of the guitar. Ba-ching!
That would be incredible.
I'm sure
you can get them relatively cheap these days, too.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I have been wanting to start writing up a comedy routine because I've always been inspired by Bill Hicks and George Carlin. I'm nowhere near as funny or as insightful as those guys are, admittedly. But gosh dang, it'd be fun to be up on stage just making a few people have a few cackles.
Without a doubt. And Bill Hicks was absolutely incredible. There's a pretty good documentary out there about the censorship of Bill Hicks when he was getting really popular and they wanted to have him on popular late night shows here in the United States. I mean, they'd cancel on him at the last minute because, you know, it's probably the case that these producers are like, oh, I hear about this guy, let's book him. And then someone's like, wait, have you actually seen this guy's material? And then they watch a clip and they're like, no! Freaking out. Strike him from the schedule at the last minute. But I mean, he really did do a phenomenal job of making people incredibly uncomfortable in many cases. I mean, I'm sure you've seen those clips where he's literally just screaming at the crowd, and a lot of people get it and are laughing, and some are genuinely scared and upset and want to leave. I mean, it is just incredible.
I think if you've got extremity in your personality, it's best to let it out, I think. Kind of like if you want to, I'm not sure how to actually put this. If you've got something really, really nasty and angry and full of rage inside of you, it's so much better to just let it out rather than try and contain it, because if you try and contain it, it just sort of eats you from the inside out.
Without a doubt, but I think there, you know, there are certain contexts. Bill Hicks, you know, he had a wonderful platform to do that. He could just scream at people and they'd pay to come back the next night. But, you know, one example where it might not be the best context to just wildly scream at someone would be on the Piers Morgan show when you're talking about something like gun rights. You know, in that context, maybe screaming, you know, over someone isn't necessary. The best route if you're trying to convince anyone of your argument, you know.
Yeah, well, it's ironic how much nationalism can put people off loving their nation.
Yep, it's pretty disturbing these days. You know, it seems like the only thing that gets people together anymore is violence. It seems, you know, it's classic jingoism, really, an overly aggressive foreign policy to kind of cover up all of the horrible things that are going on domestically. You know, a great example would be the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden and the displays of absolute insanity outside the White House after. I'm sure, have you seen those clips where a lot of people, they're asked why they're there? They don't even know. I mean, they literally think that Saddam Hussein was killed in one case. I mean, they have no clue why they're there. They're just waving flags, like, America, yeah! You know, it's sad, but that's that seems to be the state of affairs currently.
Oh, no. See, I don't know about you, but I'm ashamed to be a New Zealander because I think that New Zealanders are so crazy and so dumb and so ignorant. Just imagine how ashamed people are to be American.
Yeah, it is really, really sad. You know, I think that the fact that reality television is the most popular thing right now, and you just turn it on and it literally makes me want to weep. For America, it's like these are the people who people worship, essentially. I mean, they are idols, really. It's sickening. You know, not too long ago, I'm sure you've seen before the segment on Jay Leno. It's probably the only thing I like about Jay Leno, but it's called Jaywalking, and he basically goes around the street and asks people about, you know, basic facts about history, about the United States, about politics, current events, whatever. I mean, stuff even as basic as, you know, what countries border the United States, and people have no clue. I mean, it really is shocking, but they did one with reality TV stars and YouTube stars, and it literally, I was dying laughing, but at the same time, you know, I really wanted to cry because these are famous people. You know, these are people who are looked up to, and they know absolutely nothing. I mean, it is just shocking the amount of ignorance.
But it's it makes a lot of sense, though, doesn't it? Because if the vast majority of the population are so stupid, how did they get that way? Who are their idols? Obviously, people who are even stupider than they are.
Yes, it's very true, actually. And, you know, I think it's telling that those are the people who are famous. They're not famous in many cases for anything other than being drunk idiots. I mean, that is really their claim to fame. You know, I got drunk and fought people and, you know, said really imbecilic things on television. I'm famous. And, you know, they're looked up to by a lot of people, unfortunately. One I think you'd really enjoy, Jay Leno did a Jaywalking the News type thing where he was, you know, having a fake news show. And, you know, he would ask people, you think you can do this better than newscasters? They're like, oh, of course. And then they get up there and, you know, of course, they have absolutely no idea what is going on. I mean, none whatsoever. One woman thought Iran bordered the UK, I believe. I mean, it's really truly shocking what some people actually think. But like you said, it's, you know, it's a function of our culture, really, at this point.
Yeah, it is. You know, I get really sad when I just think about that. And you always get really sad when you think about just how dire the situation is. And it's like, sheep always follow the shepherd. And the problem is, the shepherds that the United States now have are dumber than the sheep that they're leading. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Madison Rupert from endthelie.com is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TVI brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest today is from EndTheLie.com by the name of Madison Rupert. Without doubt, the smartest 23-year-old I've ever spoken to in my life. I think, in fact, it was exactly the same age as you are now was when I woke up and started going out with a camera and trying to expose scumbaggery myself. And you've come so far in such a short time. You're going to be huge, mate, huge. And here's the thing. Age is no indication of somebody's intelligence or the importance of their thoughts, really. And I was just wondering, where did you gain all of this this wisdom and this ability to talk? Who were your mentors?
That's a very good question, and one which I probably don't have a very satisfying answer for, unfortunately. I kind of draw from a wide variety of sources. I advocate that people do exactly what I did, and that's consume as much information as humanly possible and not take anyone at their word, and instead actually research their claims for themselves. And just doing that is how I accumulated, a great deal of information. All my life, unfortunately, I've been one of those people who just acquires lots of useless facts, but now I'm acquiring useful facts, at least, hopefully. It's really just been a slow buildup. It started quite slow, but when you're writing about this kind of stuff and reading about it every single day for 2+ years, I've been doing the website for 2 years, probably reading about this kind of stuff for at least 2 years before that seriously. It just slowly builds up. I think a lot of people out there probably underestimate their own ability to retain information. It's just, when this kind of stuff gets drilled into your head over and over, it becomes very easy to regurgitate it in a coherent manner. I think the unfortunate thing, though, is in my own experience and in my education, you're not given the critical thinking tools to actually reason through information. We were talking during the break about modern education, especially when it comes to history. They just throw useless facts at you, get you to memorize these useless facts, put them down on a test, usually multiple choice, so you have no room to actually express any kind of original thought. You just, get into these little strategies even of eliminating answers and this whole thing, so you don't even really need to learn the information. But you don't learn anything about what drives history, what is behind these events. You just learn useless little facts. And unfortunately, you know, even in my current studies at the college level, you really have no critical thinking in the classroom. I mean, it's insane to talk about absolute truth. We talked about it at the very beginning in a recent graduate level course I was taking on mass communication theory. I was talking about the absurdity of the idea of no objective truth and no objective reality and these kinds of things, and a lot of people looked as though I was literally sitting there and speaking Mandarin to them. I mean, it was sad, and these are things that I think, you know, everyone should be reasoning through. Do you really believe that there is no absolute truth? Can you really intellectually defend that? And some people, unfortunately, aren't faced with that challenge of actually having their beliefs put to the test. And I think that's something that's very important. Even when you're into this kind of information, you think something's true, but do you really know it is true? Put it to the test. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people get into this kind of research and get in their own little bubble, and they're never challenged by having to explain this type of stuff to people who are outside of this bubble. And that's something that I try to do, and I try to do on my website, is engage people at a level where, even with no understanding of what's going on in the world, you can look at these stories and understand that these are not isolated incidents, and these are not isolated stories. You know, it's kind of a cliche to say everything is connected, and I don't believe everything is connected by any means, but, you know, every story does have something behind it. It is never an isolated event, and unfortunately, the mainstream media, that's exactly the narrative they present. This thing happened, the end. No context. No driving forces behind it. No pointing out the inconsistencies of the story, or how this has happened before, or what the possible results may be. And that's really what I make an effort to do, hopefully I'm doing it at least to a small degree.
Now, you had some Piers Morgan quotes.
Yes, these are absolutely classic. I just saw this. It's Piers Morgan discussing the Alex Jones interview with Dylan Byers of Politico.com. And this is exactly what you were saying that you were discussing with the host earlier. This is a quote from Piers Morgan. Quote, "He was the best advertisement for gun control you could wish for," unquote, Morgan told Politico. So, I mean, this really is the case. Alex Jones just got up there and convinced people who were probably on the fence that we need gun control because people like him have 50 firearms, and that's probably scary to a lot of people. But there's another one. Quote, "That kind of vitriol, hatred, and zealotry is really quite scary. I didn't feel threatened by him, but I'm concerned that someone like him has that level of influence. There's got to be a level of discourse that can rise above what happened last night. It was undignified, unedifying," unquote. He also called the exchange a, quote, "big, long rant," unquote. And one of the best quotes, I think, is, quote, "Sometimes it's better to let someone have the rope they need to tie themselves in knots," unquote, Morgan told Politico. I mean, that is really I highly recommend you watch the clip. It's not very long at all. He was supposed to be on much longer, but it's clear, you know, why he was booted. I mean, it really wasn't going anywhere. It was just him screaming and then challenging him to a boxing match. It got very bizarre. It really did get very bizarre. You know, I'm not by any means an Alex Jones fan, but, you know, I can see how in some ways he does some important work, a lot of which I think is incredibly misleading, because he'll misrepresent information, lie about sources, all kinds of stuff, which I've personally encountered in my experience with that operation. And it really is an operation. It's a multi-million dollar operation, like any large news organization. But It was beyond crazy. I mean, here's another quote. Quote, he is clearly a smart guy under the craziness. Look, you could tell from the way he ranted that he's not a stupid man, but that makes him more dangerous. There will be lots of people who follow him avidly who are not so intelligent, who believe everything he says, unquote. And I think that brings me back to what I was saying before. You know, even if you're the world's most devoted Alex Jones fan, you need to check out the claims. You need to do it every single time. I mean, really, don't take anyone's word for it. Even if you trust them with your life, it doesn't mean the information they're giving you is untainted, unbiased, and accurate, unfortunately. I wish that wasn't the case, you know, but it just is. I mean, that's reality, unfortunately.
Yeah. Got a couple of words. My three favorite words are I don't know. And two other ones that are really good is possibility and allegedly. Somebody tells you something and you don't know if it's true, then it goes into the realm of possibility. And if you're going to tell somebody about this fact that you've heard of, but don't know if it's true, you can say, allegedly, this is what he said.
Yes, and another favorite of mine is reportedly, because, you know, there's lots of stuff that will be reported, but, I mean, can I fly over to some foreign country and investigate the claims for myself or interview the people? Unfortunately not. You know, I don't have those kinds of resources. So I highly recommend people pay attention to the words that are used, and especially when we're talking about large news organizations like the Associated Press and Reuters, they are very careful, usually, about their copy. And when they're writing about something, when you see reportedly, allegedly, supposedly, these kinds of qualifiers, you should treat it with a great degree of skepticism, in my experience.
In my experience, anything the mainstream media says is to be dealt with a great degree of skepticism.
Yes, that's very true. And in a completely different topic, very quick, I don't know if you've been following, you know, the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, which is, you know, people love because it's all these sexy new gadgets and stuff like that.
They had a piece on New Zealand media last night, yeah.
Oh, really? One of the big ones is Panasonic's facial recognition TV. Woohoo! More facial recognition technology. So that's
it's the TV that watches you.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is. It says a New York Times report says the idea is to put all the content in one place so a viewer does not have to search separately for TV shows and video on demand. Each family member can have a personalized screen and will not have to sign in. The higher end Panasonic TVs will have a built-in camera that will use face recognition to determine whose preferences to display. Isn't that just wonderful?
It's just wonderful. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. We broadcast live 5 days a week right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Pacific time, 5 till 7 Central, 6 till 8 Eastern time, and in New Zealand the time would be about maybe midday till 2 p.m. during the summer and 10 a.m. till midday during the winter time when the time zones change over and things of that nature. My very special guest who's still with us just for this last segment, he has a family affair to go and see and attend to right after this, so we won't waste any time at all. Is there anything you of importance that you'd really like to share with the listeners?
Well, I just encourage people once again to even when you're reading my stories over at endthelie.com, don't please don't just read it and be like, oh, you know, this is wonderful, must be true. Click through to the sources. I highly encourage, the reason I link sources in my articles and link other articles that I've written is because I want people to click through and check it out for themselves. You know, a lot of the things I talk about, drones, you know, various legislation like the National Defense Authorization Act and all of these kinds of things, privacy issues, technology. They're not isolated, and you really do need to do your own reading and check it all out for yourself. Vet it, please. And I, you know, I do encourage people to email me, you know, if they find something, another source that's relevant, or, you know, stories and so on. I actually rely a large part on people emailing me tips to come up with these stories. You know, I have like probably 100 different sites on my toolbar that I try to click through every single day, but it gets overwhelming, and there's so many little sites that will cover, you know, something once in a blue moon that is absolutely important and doesn't get covered elsewhere. So, you know, I really do encourage people to keep in touch with me that way. And if people are on the wonderful NSA surveillance apparatus known as Facebook, you can check us out there as well. It's facebook.com/endthelie, and of course, we're also on all the other social network/surveillance tools. But, you know, people, I have been criticized for even using Facebook, but, you know, my opinion is, you know, if you're already on there, too late, you know. You can't delete your account, folks. It is far too late to backtrack now. So you might as well hijack it, essentially, and try to use it to spread information. You know, at least use it while you can, unless you get banned for posting offensive content, which is quite easy these days.
I believe the correct pronunciation is Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always thought about this. Why people don't use Facebook. Yeah. I'm afraid of being surveilled while they're emailing me this, or while they're Skyping me this.
While they're calling you on their cell phone, of course.
or while they're text messaging me this. And the example that I tell them is the samurai example. In Japan, I think this is made famous by the movie with Tom Cruise called The Last Samurai, which was filmed, incidentally, in New Zealand. They refused to use modern weaponry. And guess what happened? They got annihilated. If you do not use the modern warfare techniques, if you choose to keep doing things the old way that has been surpassed, that is now ineffective by comparison to the new technology, you will be annihilated. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
Use the weapons of the enemy against them.
If it came down to it, if I really wanted to be, you know, ultra privacy, I'd be printing out leaflets in, you know, off my little cheapo printer here in my apartment and handing them out, and, you know, I'd probably reach maybe 100 people, 99 of which wouldn't care. They'd throw it away immediately. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, unfortunately, especially here in the United States, or anywhere for that matter, when you're using the internet, unless you are a privacy freak, and by that I mean you are using a virtual PC through a VPN connection, then using another VPN once you connect through that virtual PC, and then using that to connect to a proxy server, all with a browser with no scripts enabled, and then even then maybe connecting to another virtual PC, and then using that to browse the web. That's the only way that you would remain even remotely anonymous on the internet. And even then, you know, all they have to do is throw a Trojan on your computer, and boom, it really doesn't matter at all. And of course, there's companies out there. The Wall Street Journal, of all publications, covered this. They basically got their hands on a lot of promotional material by these companies who advertise surveillance software, basically, is what they do. And one company advertised that they can serve fake Adobe Update prompts and iTunes update prompts that look 100% legitimate. You cannot tell they're fake. But you click it, and it actually installs a Trojan, which monitors every single thing you do on your computer remotely. And no amount of proxies and VPNs and virtual machines and all this kind of stuff can prevent that, unfortunately. And then, of course, there's the good old cell phone and the good old, old-fashioned traditional bug, so to speak, you know, but now everyone carries around a personal surveillance device in their pocket. So it's really, you know, why place a physical bug when you carry one on you?
Yeah, and under Project Echelon, which was signed by the English-speaking countries, you know, Canada, United States, New Zealand, Australia, and the UK, it's illegal for the New Zealand government to surveil the New Zealand citizens. But it's not illegal if the UK does it, or if the Australians do it, or the Americans or the Canadians. It's illegal for the Americans to surveil the American population, but it ain't illegal for them to surveil the Canadians and the UK, and right? So what they did is they created this agreement called Project Echelon so that they would share information. Every single text message, every single phone call, every single email, all forms of digital communication. I think it's like, allegedly, the telephone companies here in New Zealand are required by law to keep up to 1 year of information on every cell phone number.
Only on a file. Year? Only a yeah. year?
Only a year. And I think most people change their cell phones every other month or something like that. So they've got, like, you know, lists, a long list. You know, they can tell how many numbers you've had over how long. It's just insane. And just think about how long and how much data that they would be having to consume. And allegedly, there's this massive data storage center in like Cheyenne Mountain in the States or something like that, that is so power hungry and is expanding so rapidly that it's causing brownouts in the United States. You know,
yeah,
people have so much information that's all red flagged for analysis and things like that. And I'm just talking about what they were capable of doing like maybe 10, 15 years ago. God knows what they're able to do now.
Yeah, the NSA is actually building a $2 billion data center in Utah precisely for that. It's going to have, you know, be able to store more data than any other facility on Earth, you know, several thousand times over, reportedly, of course, because it's all ultra, ultra top secret. But, you know, it's interesting. Here in the United States, we have the National Counterterrorism Center, which is a little known entity, really, and they collect personal information on Americans' credit card transactions, phone conversations, email, you know, web activity, whatever it may be. And they've given themselves the authority. This is literally what they did. They just gave themselves the authority to hold information on Americans with no links to terrorism. No links to terrorism. That is a very important fact for up to 5 years. And then, of course, they can just do it again for another 5 years. I mean, there's nothing stopping them, you know, whatsoever. So New Zealand, I say only 5 years kind of only 1 year kind of tongue in cheek, because here in the U.S. it's 5 years, and it's not just phone records. It's all records. It's all personal records. It's absolutely insane. And here in the U.S., for instance, we have the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which is absolutely disgusting, and it was reauthorized very recently. I believe it was in December. But all they have to do is say that they believe that someone participating in the communications is outside of the United States, and then they can monitor it. But the key word is belief, and then they can start the surveillance 1 week before even submitting the request. And then if it's denied, which like never happens, I mean it's absolutely ridiculous the approval rate of these requests. Then they can continue to conduct surveillance during the appeals process. And in many cases, they don't even have to specify what is actually being monitored and surveilled. I mean, it's really laughable, it's scary because the vast majority of senators and congresspeople vote for these types of things. I mean, and it's all, of course, done in the name of fighting terrorism. You know, those big bad terrorists that are, you know, itching to get at our nuclear weapons and stuff, which reminds me, just today I was talking to someone at the place where I eat breakfast. And we were talking about how this 82-year-old nun and two others literally walked onto the Y-12 National Security Complex, which is called the Fort Knox of Uranium, colloquially. And it is the place where they literally do all of the enrichment. I mean, it has most of the weapons-grade uranium in the United States. This place is supposed to be absolutely completely secure. 82-year-old nun walks onto the place, sets off several alarms, and then hangs out there throwing, I think it was paint, and maybe some animal blood or something on walls and stuff for 2 hours before they're arrested. I mean, yes, this is we should really be worried about terrorism, because apparently they can't stop an 82-year-old nun. But the moral of the story is, if a terrorist really wanted to get at nuclear facilities and all these various things, and, you know, they stopped doing background checks at chemical plants, if there really was this giant terrorist threat, don't you think they would have done something by now, and the FBI wouldn't have to be framing people over and over and creating terrorism? I mean, it really is insane at this point to use that as a justification for continuing to strip our rights.
Well, I think people have got to get used to the idea that privacy is an illusion that no longer exists.
It's very true.
To that point, I say let them watch. Let him watch. Let him listen to this show. Let him read all those posts that I'm putting up on the thing. Every single analyst or whatever that gets put through that is actually being exposed to our propaganda as they're surveilling it. And our propaganda works just as well, if not better, than the enemy propaganda. So by surveilling us and watching everything that we do, it's actually counterproductive to their cause. Because they're waking up their own tyrannical employees to the fact that they're, oh my God, I'm serving tyranny and scumbags.
Yeah, it's very true, and when it comes down to it, I do hope they listen, and I do hope they read my website. That would be wonderful. I'm sure they're reading it and saying, wait a second, you know, all of this stuff is actually heavily sourced, and wait, what? That you can't disprove any of this, you know? And I'm not saying it's unfalsifiable in that, you know, it's an assertion that can't be proved or disproved. It can be easily proved or disproved, and everything that I write about can easily be verified. I mean, all this stuff is easy. I'm not claiming, you know, I have secret, you know, government sources in Area 51 who are feeding me top secret insider info or anything. I don't cover stuff like that. It's all 100% public, and that's what's scary to me, because, you know, who knows what's going on behind the scenes, really. I mean, if this kind of stuff is just the public information, you know, I can't even begin to imagine what the secret information is like.
Well, exactly. And I think the public's so dumbed down at this point, they think secret sources are what they get on their Big Mac.
Yeah, yes, that's very true. And I don't know
they think a technocrat is a DJ, you know?
It's very true, actually. I heard someone in one of my classes not too long ago asking what a technocrat was, and, you know, saying something to that effect. Isn't it, you know, a type of music or something like that?
You know, you can't make this stuff up. That's the thing. You got to focus, right? So here's the point. I'm speaking to Madison Rupert from endthelie.com. Been speaking to him for about an hour, 10 minutes or whatever. And we're talking about really important stuff that actually matters. I will not subject myself to hanging out with people who don't know what the hell they're talking about, don't care about humanity, and aren't doing anything important with their lives. It is not worth my time. I don't watch reality television. I barely even watch the news anymore because it's so pointless. You know, people have got to prioritize. What are you spending your time on? No, seriously, ladies and gentlemen listening, What are you spending your time on? Who are you spending your time with? Is it important? Is it worth it? Are you somehow learning or evolving or changing humanity for the better in some way, shape, or form? If the answer is no, you're not doing anything important.
It's far too true, and nowadays it's even easier to distract ourselves with anything and everything that has no relevance to real life whatsoever. If it is, you know, incredibly engrossing video games that can suck people into this alternate reality so much so that they literally die because they don't eat or drink because they think, you know, their character eating and drinking will actually keep their real bodies alive, or, you know, if it's reality television or movies that are pumped out like every single second. I mean, it's just amazing how easily you can pull yourself out of reality these days.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the reality is you can't stay with us forever, and we're about to come to break. So, Madison, thank you very much for your time. InTheLie.com is his website. Cheers, bro.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. We'll see you again sometime. After the break, ladies and gentlemen, I have no idea what I'm going to be discussing. In fact, there was an article about tsunami bombs being set off the coast of New Zealand and a number of other places as well that they've been testing to try and make a 10-meter tsunami. we'll look at that. Be right back.
Everything that the U.S. government, everything else that the U.S. government is involved in, because they do run almost all of the crime. And you gotta love organized crime, don't you?
Welcome back, everybody. All right, now, Rocket is on the line, and I'll come to you in just a second. I want to share a piece of philosophy for you. I was looking for articles to read out on the show during the segment, and I was looking down New Zealand Herald, our equivalent of the New York Times, and it's like, police run one person off the road. That's not news. Police arrest a murderer. That's not news. You know, just rubbish. And ironically, the very first article that I saw that was might be worth reading out is election apathy shows need for civics at school. I mean, come on. Obviously. It's been that way for quite some time. All right, now, call-in number is 218-339-8525. And we're going to go to our first caller now. Rocket, are you there, mate? Rocket, are you there?
Yes, sir. You recognize me.
Well, it's written down on the board, so whenever you call in, there you are.
Mm. Yeah. Hey, great show.
Well, thank you.
You know, as an outspoken talk show host myself, I often wonder when the red team is going to kick my door down.
Yeah, I don't think the red team needs to kick your door down, because I think they think we've already in a prison camp, and they can already see everything that we're doing anyway. There's no need. It's like digital transcendence of tyranny. It's like now we don't even need real tyranny. We've got virtual tyranny that's doing just as good a job.
Did you know it's a felony to know about a felony and do nothing about it?
You know, I didn't know that. But yeah, you know, imagine.
Are the president police? Where's the legislative branch police? What sheriff has the gall, say like Virginia or something, to drive over to the White House and ask to speak to the president and then place them under arrest for murder? I think would be the easiest thing. for killing Anwar Zahawi or Alaki and his son. U.S. citizens murdered him.
Now, I think that there's an interesting point to be raised here about this. If you know the commission of a crime and you don't report it, that's a crime. I think that instead of going after the person who committed the crime, you should simply go after all the people that have covered up the crime. And I think that would create such a climate of fear amongst criminals that they would start readily dobbing each other in order to get amnesty. What do you think?
I'm afraid that if that starts, it'll start a reign of terror, kind of a French Revolution style, maybe a Cambodian style purge of everybody that was the collective rage will be so bad once people realize they have no retirement and people are broke. The collective rage will be so bad, these New World Order types are going to be wanted men.
Mm. I don't know. I think it depends how entertained people are and whether or not the Prozac supply runs out.
Hey, I'm starting to figure something out, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
There is some very weird. One of my little things that I love to pursue is the Benghazi, because it's just fascinating, and it just gets me those guys got killed for being brave. But I have found that was a coup attempt. That's what the purging of all the top brass is for. And I'm finding out, I didn't realize this until just a few days ago, there is a rift between the Obama camp and the Bush-Clinton camp, big time.
Really? In what way?
Well, that's the thing. One of my reliable sources told me that when they were in the ready room watching this go down for 4 hours, it took Hillary Clinton 45 minutes to get to the ready room in the White House to watch the footage from drones of what was going on in the Benghazi torture compound. And I heard from my buddy that what he heard was, you know, just conjecture, was she said, let those fuckers burn. Now
you can't say that on FCC regulated radio.
Oh, I'm
even though
sorry.
It was
that was a direct quote.
It happens from time to time. But you know, it's fine. I think that Hillary is well, you know, I gotta say this, it might be mean, it might be cruel, but why couldn't that blood clot in her brain have actually killed her? I mean, come on. You know, wouldn't the doctor just be sitting here, hey, I could just let it go, and it might actually save a lot more lives if this one goes.
I think the whole blood clot is all a farce. That ties into the Petraeus issue. I think that's a way of firing her and letting her maintain her. And this is Muslim Brotherhood. It's all about the Muslim Brotherhood. That whole Benghazi was all about the Muslim Brotherhood.
Wasn't the Muslim Brotherhood founded and supported by the CIA or something like that?
Well,
it's kind of like a recruiting arm. That, like, you know how the Republican Party, for example, they've got scouts and they go out and they try and find, you know, up and comers, rising stars, charismatic people so that they can bring them into the fold so that all these other people who want to be like them, you know, want to be in the public eye or be wealthy or start their own businesses and things like that will be inspired by these people and go and vote for them. The Muslim Brotherhood is more or less the same. They recruit the top brass in the Arab world, you know, the doctors, the lawyers and all of these top clerics and things like that. And what it does, effectively, the exact same as the Republican Party or Democrats or whatever major party you want to talk about, National Party in New Zealand here, exact same thing. You wind up kneecapping any possibility of people getting into politics on their own for honest and integral purposes. And you wind up divvying that control out to the people who started the party instead. What do you reckon?
Well, if I could, just to go back a little bit, just so you know, the Muslim Brotherhood predates the CIA by a long shot. And what's happened is we, as we in the government has become very favorable and very friendly with the Muslim Brotherhood several times, early in the 40s and 50s, to help with communism. They figured, now that was CIA, they figured CIA analysts believed that they could get the Mujahideen to appeal to the United States. It says, "In God we trust on our money. You're fighting communism." That was atheist. Okay, well then, after that fell away, they fell out of favor and were considered terrorists and whatnot. And then this gal, Huma, she's married to Anthony Weiner, and she's Hillary Clinton's main gal. She's attractive. She's charming and well-educated, but she's Muslim Brotherhood. And her mother is like the founding of the Muslim Sisterhood. And she's an active member, and she's Hillary Clinton's number one assistant. And now, just recently, in a newspaper, I can't name the names, brother, but six inner circle people were outed yesterday in Egypt as Muslim Brotherhood operatives within the White House.
How interesting.
Yes, and her brother, Huma, he has connections with the Oxford University, in which is considered a Muslim Brotherhood. And, you know, they have a charter saying they want to take over the world.
Who doesn't?
Well, I don't. A lot of people, not normal people that just work every day, don't think. But these guys have a system, it's called The Project. You can actually Google that. And it's similar to the Communist Manifesto, how it lays out to infiltrate. They call it jihad by civilization. They're not going to fire a shot. They just use the womb and politics.
Sounds exactly like Fabian socialism to me.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I'll just tell you, on Freedom Radio yesterday, once again, my apologies for the swearing. That was a quote, by the way. On Freedom Radio yesterday, I just called in because I love radio, and I started listening to the show while I was on the phone on hold, and I was horrified by what I heard on your guys' show on the radio channel. It was Muslim guys. And
you mean Kevin Barrett's show? Yeah.
He's a and he hung up on me because I start yelling. I spoke to you a long time ago. You said, "Nice rant," is what you told me. I had held for 40 minutes. You probably remember that.
It does happen on occasion, but very rarely have people got that kind of patience.
Yeah, you said, "Wow, 42 minutes, let's talk to him." And then I ranted. I usually rant. I have a YouTube channel. I rant on there, you know. But I called those guys yesterday, and I'm calling it, bro. I did a show about it. Those guys are Islamic infiltrators. They're apologists. They're anti-American. They hate America. The guy threw it in my face immediately that he had a PhD in Islamic studies, which to me is like having a PhD in Branch Davidian studies. That means nothing. That means you've been in school while I was serving my country. That's what that means. But to smart me up, you know, I've been there. I asked him if he'd been to Mecca, because I realized he's Islamic. He's Islam. He's a white guy that's Islamic. He said he'd been to Morocco, which is the second largest hotbed of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's their political branch. And you know why he hasn't been to Mecca? He's white. He'll probably get his ass beat.
See, you know, I really got to take a step back here. What has Kevin Barrett said, in your opinion, that is anti-American?
Well, if I could, and you know, I don't want to bore you, brother, but my show's the Rocket Radio Show 1 on YT, and I made a show about it. Feel free to listen to it at length. But it's, and I've got to tell you, I haven't heard anything more smarmy and more sinister and more co-IntelPro ever. Alex Jones couldn't hold a candle to that guy. That guy's horrible. Let me try. I'll try to do it my best, okay? Well, we all know that Islam came from Abraham, you know, the biblical characters, Christianity. I mean, it's basically same culture, Islam, Christianity, same cultures. They come from the same, you know, and if we go back even further, the Hellenistic era, blah, 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 keeps talking. What did he say there? He says that Islam and Christianity are the same culture. I don't think so. I don't see any Christians cutting anybody's noses off. Sorry. I don't see Christians tearing down the pyramids. Sorry.
I do see Christians financing drone strikes in Pakistan, though.
All right, cool, cool, cool. And I acknowledge that. And once again, if you were a fan of mine, I've done numerous shows on both the Palestinians, what I think is wrong. I'm an anti-Zionist, too, so you know they can throw me in that pot. I'm not anti-Islam, but I don't like infiltration. And to constantly keep referring to America about it's an empire, and then you say it casually, bro, what they do is they paint this picture. It's all liberalism. It's Marxism. He's been in college for 8 years. He paints this picture that America is nothing more than a criminal enterprise. And then he drapes everything he says in red, white, and blue. It's kind of like the devil, a little bit of truth sprinkled in with a bunch of lies. And it's educated, smarmy, friendly, respectable. The only thing he doesn't have is a British accent, or he'd have everything. Because he can talk pleasant and explain how Islam, and he says this, he's got a caller, okay, I'll mock him. He says, oh, isn't it wonderful? Yeah, wouldn't it be weird if Islam wound up saving the Western civilization again? How ironic. Okay, well, it's been great talking to you. Great comment. See you later. Okay, let me put this in normal language, okay? I'm never going to bow my head, so that means I die. My daughter's not going to wear a burqa no matter what. That means she dies. So to sit around and talk about how America is going to convert to an ideology that is the complete antithesis of our belief system is seditious.
You're a traitor. Have you read the Quran?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, once again, unfortunately, even though the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary and spoke Aramaic to her, by the time Gabriel made it over to Muhammad, he could only speak Arabic at that time. So unfortunately, the Quran is recorded in Arabic. Arabic is similar to Gaelic in some ways, almost impossible to master if you didn't learn it as a primary language. And so any of those Muslim guys that are listening to my voice right now and you think you're cool, those Arabic dudes talk trash about you because they know no matter what, how it's translated, you cannot translate Arabic properly. So if you question the Quran in the slightest, they'll just say, oh, well, you don't speak Arabic, you wouldn't understand. They always have that out. The Quran is, I mean, I'm educated. I've been there. I know all about, asked a lot of questions.
Unfortunately, we've come to break, Rocket. Well, thanks for your call and your opinions there, man.
Hey, you sounded like you didn't know what you're going to do for this segment.
What we often do sometimes is that we criticize people because we know what's going on, and you find that people just don't listen because they don't want to research into it themselves. We'll be right back.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. If you want to know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours and take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop! 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off, and you feel like you're in New Zealand.
Welcome back.
You certainly won't feel like you're home.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Ainsworth Show. It's the final segment today, and we were talking with Rocket just there about religion, Muslims and Muslim Brotherhood and beliefs and all of that kind of stuff. And me, I think I'm deeply spiritual, and I have real faith, yet I follow no religion. I have many people of different faiths who are my friends and confidants, many of which try to convert me. And I don't know. It's belief versus belief. rather than fact versus fact. If you are living your life, what they say, through God or in a godly manner or whatever, you are, in general, I actually am following Christian, Muslim, anarchist, and Buddhist, and a number of other belief structures without me even knowing it. I was following these doctrines, and still continue to do so today. And maybe that makes me muddled, but I think that the Constitution enshrined freedom of religion for a reason, to prevent people from warring or persecuting against each other based upon their beliefs. You know, your beliefs are your own, and as long as you don't hurt anybody, it should be fine. You should be free to do what you wish. That's my perspective on it. And I don't hurt nobody. I don't steal anybody's property or anything like that. So, that's how I go about my life regardless. Okay, now, I wanted to read out this article because one of my listeners sent me this on Facebook. I was just like, what the? You know, one of those article things that you see. And I'd like to show this to somebody who we had on. You remember when the massive tsunami hit Japan back in the day? Benjamin Fulford, live from Japan, called me first out of anybody. I was the first person to get him on radio during that day. And on the day, we were actually having a man named Shannon Phipps, who's a DJ here in New Zealand, trying to debunk earthquake prediction and things of that nature. And he was just, he doesn't like me very much at all. You know, calls me crazy and that everything that I say should be taken with a grain of salt. But regardless, Benjamin Fulford claimed that they were using a tsunami bomb in order to create that tsunami off the coast of Japan. So here's the article out of the Telegraph, and I think this was posted on the 1st of January 2013, when nobody's reading the paper because they're off with their families, of course. Tsunami bomb tested off New Zealand coast. Let me read that again. Tsunami bomb tested off New Zealand coast. The United States and New Zealand conducted secret tests of a tsunami bomb designed to destroy coastal cities by using underwater blasts to trigger massive tidal waves. The tests were carried out in waters around New Caledonia and Auckland during the Second World War and showed that the weapon was feasible and a series of 10 large offshore blasts could potentially create a... Wait for the symbolism here. 33-foot tsunami capable of inundating a small city. I love it how the number 33 just kind of appears everywhere. I'm always looking for it, and sure enough, I always find it. In fact, even so much as children's cartoons. I was watching a movie called Bolt. You know, so one of those digital things about this dog sort of thing, and the dog is. Got this frisbee that is a bomb, and it gets thrown towards the camera, and as the bomb hits the camera, it's on 33 seconds, you know? All these sorts of little symbols and things. People can deny if they want, but I watch lots of movies, and I mean lots and lots and lots of movies, more movies than anybody I know. And the Masonic symbolism is absolutely everywhere. The numbers, the numerologies, it's everywhere. For it to be coincidence, very, very unlikely, in my opinion. The top secret operation, codenamed Project Seal, as in seal your fate, tested the doomsday device as a possible rival to the nuclear bomb. About 3,700 bombs were exploded during the tests, first in New Caledonia and later at Whangaraparoa Peninsula near Auckland. The plans came to light during research by a New Zealand author and filmmaker, Ray Waru, who examined military files buried in the National Archives. Presumably, if the atomic bomb had not worked as well as it did, we might have been tsunamiing people, said Mr. Warrow. It was absolutely astonishing, first that anyone would come up with the idea of developing a weapon of mass destruction based on a tsunami, and also that New Zealand seems to have successfully developed it to the degree that it might have worked. The project was launched in June 1944 after U.S. Naval Officer E.A. Gibson noticed that blasting operations to clear coral reefs around Pacific Island sometimes produced a large wave, raising the possibility of creating a tsunami bomb. Mr. Warrow said the initial testing was positive, but the project was eventually shelved in early 1945. And by shelved military projects, they probably mean it went underground because they didn't want people to know about it. And incidentally, this guy had to dig up an archive from fracking, what was that, 65 years ago? In order to find out what they're actually doing. Back then, who knows what they're doing now? Now, you can't make this stuff up, okay? You can't say you can't make this stuff up enough. It's crazy. It's just freaking crazy. On to another article, and this is the one I referred to earlier. I only have a few minutes left in the broadcast today. Democracy is the best form of government. I love it how articles are here. It's the best form of government. Why? Because it's mob rule? Because nobody gets what they want? Because every single tyranny throughout history has started as a democracy, you know? What qualifies it as the best form of government? This article is entitled, as I said before, Election Apathy Shows Need for Civics at School. Now, did this guy study civics? And exactly how did the propaganda work? Well, it told him that democracy was the best system of government, all right? As he gets subsequently enslaved and or exterminated by it, he gets told through the civics classes that it's the best form of government there is. The United States isn't a democracy. They keep being, all the United States people get told, oh, we've got a democracy, it's the best form of government. It's not a democracy, it's a republic. Somebody having enshrined personal, individual, protected freedoms. That is a republic. People having no inherent rights, people being able to take away the rights of others so long as they've got over 50% of people saying that other 49% should have no rights, is a democracy. Do you understand? In a republic, 99% of people cannot vote to take away the rights of the remaining 1%. In a democracy, you only need 51% to take away the rights of the other remaining 49%. That's democracy. Over the past decade, some concerned citizens and governments have become worried about a disengagement of politics of younger people in particular. Their disengagement shows in the number not voting. New Zealand is better off than comparable countries, thanks especially to compulsory voter registration. And did you know that if you don't register to vote, you can be fined in New Zealand? And also, I think it's like, if you do register to vote and you don't vote, then your vote is given automatically by proxy to the winning parties. Right? And last election, we had the lowest voter turnout since 1886, when women weren't even able to vote. I can only stress as to why this might be. Might have been that the media, for the 6 months leading up to the operation, was saying, oh, the election is a slam dunk. There's no way Key can't be elected. And also, as is the case with every single election that I've ever seen in a Western country, there was a major sporting event going on at the same time as the election, which everybody drew their focus on. The most massive sporting event that New Zealand had ever had in its entirety of history, the Rugby World Cup. And so when that finished, there was less than a couple of weeks left for everybody to suddenly inform and engage the public in some kind of political debate or anything like that. It's all stitched up. That's democracy. Hate this country sometimes. You know, just see everybody's just so stupid, easily manipulated, chicken neck cowards who just sit back and believe their own government's propaganda. I mean, look, if I was to say on this radio show, I'm the best radio host in the world, I think you should tell me, Vinny, Shut the frack up. You're a lying propagandist swangler. All right? Because those who promote themselves and say that I'm the best, I'm the biggest, that kind of thing, they're usually just a lying scumbag who's trying to convince you to listen to them and do what they say. Because they really ain't got nothing behind them but hubris and scumbaggery, much like the New Zealand government. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll be right back tomorrow with another fabulous guest for y'all. Don't you go changing.